It has generally been acknowledged that the history and contributions of African Americans has been largely absent from our history books. That's been changing, but to a very large degree, that history has been left to African Americans themselves to research and report. One who was prolific at doing just that was St. Louisan Patricia McKissick. She and her husband collaborated on some 100 books for young readers, most of which focused on the African-American historical experience. Patricia McKissick died a week ago in St. Louis County at the age of 72. We are remembering her today with Jennifer Ilardi, youth librarian with the Florissant Valley branch of the St. Louis County Library. By the way, we'd like to hear from you as we talk about Patricia McKissick. If you have experience with her books or some recollections or remembrances you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, do that at STL on air. Your remembrance of Patricia McKissick. And yours too, Jennifer. So nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Boy, you've come armed with some of her books. I'm glad you didn't bring them all, because I wouldn't be able to see you.
It would have been a lot. Yeah. No, absolutely.
She was really something, wasn't it, in terms of being prolific and also the mission that she felt she had.
Absolutely. Like, if you go to our shelves, especially in our biography section and all over, I mean, as I was preparing to come in today and I was looking through just her catalog of the number of books that she wrote, there were so many books that I had read that I didn't even recognize that they were written by her. And it's just so amazing just how many that her and her husband have made available. And thinking of a library without them in there, you could tell that there would be a huge hole in what would be available for children to learn about African American history.
Sure, and the full range. It's not just history. It's some are a little bit scary. And so
yes. Oh my goodness. I gravitate towards picture books because I like the way that the images and the words work together. And when I do storytelling in classrooms and in schools, so I always gravitate towards those. And so, like Precious and the Boo Hag was a really fun one, and it's kind of creepy, kind of scary, but still gentle enough to be able to share with the youngest students and not freak them out entirely.
Did you ever have a chance to meet her?
I didn't. Unfortunately, I did not. And I know that there was going to be an opportunity, but it was around the same time that her husband passed away. And so I did not get a chance to. But I did speak with several librarians who had met her and who said that she was just so down to earth and wonderful. And then even reading the author notes, which I know sometimes we just go ahead and skip that page and start our story. Mm-hmm. But when you read the author notes that she provides in her books, she just feels, you know, like a family member almost. You know, like I can recognize some of the language that she uses, some of the stories that she tells are similar, not exactly the same, but then looking at interviews of her online and whatnot, like just a wonderful, wonderful woman, and I've heard only good things about how down to earth she was.
Well, one of the things that I've read about her is that the loss of her husband, with whom she worked so closely, I guess it was in 2013, really devastated her. I mean, it changed things.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, when I watched them on an interview, it was amazing to see how, you know, they were working together and how you could tell that they really loved each other, and that's just heartbreaking to think about.
What was the actual age range of the books? How young did she write for?
I think she writes for, you know, maybe as early as 5, I would say. And then she's got teen books. She's got adult books about history and everything. So she really did write all across the board, and even had like easy readers for preschool children to be able to learn how to read. Messy Bessie is a early reader to be able to, you know, learn those sight words and that sort of stuff. And then, of course, storytelling transcends age. So for an adult to be able to share some of these stories like Flossie and the Fox with some of the, with your young people, I mean, it's all about just sharing stories. And she really provided great tools to be able to do that for parents and for children alike.
She, at some point in her younger life, discovered that there was a big gap in the kind of information that was out there for young African Americans.
Yeah, and she mentioned that like Virginia Hamilton was a mentor of hers, and she wrote The People Could Fly. Right? Yeah. And then Walter Dean Myers is a really awesome author, too. And then she noticed that, you know, that between like I think she said 1800s up through like the Harlem Renaissance era was a part where she just thought she could share some information and to do some research about. And now she writes historical fiction because she uses the information that she can get, and then she fills in the holes with her imagination. She fills in the gaps in order to make some really entertaining books for students of all ages.
And I guess her husband, Frederick, did most of of the research for. Well, not most. I wouldn't say that, but a lot of it. That was his role.
From what I understand, yeah. And then he also was able to, from the interview that some of the interviews that I watched, she mentioned how he helped with some of the endings of her stories, like with Flossie and the Fox, of saying, like, you know, how does that, you know, like something wasn't right. And he couldn't tell her exactly what it needed, but he was able to kind of help her think about it a little bit more. So I think they collaborated. It seems as though they collaborated on multiple different levels when it came to the books.
Her primary influence and inspiration was Paul Laurence Dunbar. Is that right?
I did hear that, yeah.
Yeah. She saw that and some of the things that he had written and wondered, you know, why isn't there more of this sort of thing out there?
Yeah, and we even see it now, too. You know, we have some amazing authors that are able to share the African-American experience, but we could use more to be able to help share our history with children.
Some of that is starting to happen now, but it's pretty late in the game. I mean, you're right. There's a lot more is necessary, particularly today and today's need for understanding.
Yeah,
and the
absolutely.
Conversations we have to have. We have some folks who want to get into this conversation. We'll talk more, obviously, but let's bring in some people who want to talk. So Donna in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead. Donna, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I met Mr. and Mrs. McKissick through my aunt and uncle, Eldora and Anderson Betts, who lived here in St. Louis, Missouri. And Mr. Betts had been very good friends with the McKissicks. And she was a little younger than him, her and her husband. But also Mr. Betts is one of the gentlemen that she interviewed for her story about the Pullman porters. And it was that many of her books have very rich and beautiful history of the local communities. And I never got over after reading about the Pullman porters, how during the Great Depression, when people were starving and had no money or food, that in every major city, many of the ministers would go to the railroad tracks, and the Pullman porters would provide them with food, baskets of food from the trains, and sometimes that would be the only food that some of their parishioners would get or have. And also, the story about Brother Wynn was the story about how her grandmother and father met as children, and it was just, you know, every time a new book of hers would come out, it would be richer, and the language was always very beautiful, and you know, it was just wonderful. And when I heard you talking about her earlier in the week, I thought, okay, she another honor, a new book, and I was very saddened to hear that she passed.
We all were.
Yes, she'll be missed. She will be missed. And I remember even some of the first books that she wrote were about her twin boys. And she was just a really lovely lady, a wonderful lady. And she was definitely a great deal has been lost with her death.
Donna, thank you so much for the call and for your recollection of Patricia McKissick. Appreciate that.
Thank you for this talk that you're having. I appreciate that.
You are certainly more than welcome. We'll bring in another caller who also was an acquaintance of the author. Arlene joins us from University City.
Yes, hi. I'm Arlene Zaremka, and I met Pat and Fred about 25 or so years ago when they had an office next door to my office in an office building. And I think the things that really struck me about both of them is that they embraced the world, and they also, whenever they wrote any books, no matter for what age, they made sure that if it was a historical book, that they were factually accurate. So they did a lot of research, particularly Fred did the research. Pat was really did a lot of the writing, though Fred, of course, also helped. And later, she and I worked on a book together called To Establish Justice, which was a history of the fight for equal rights from the beginning of the country through about 2004 when the book was published. And again, you know, here I would be writing sort of as a lawyer, sort of technical, and she would make sure that the writing was brought down to a level that was appropriate for young adults, which was our target audience. And it was just wonderful to work with her. She embraced people from all over the world, and she was also really quite a teacher. So her writing was her way of teaching, but she also did a lot of talks to schools and helped to educate students in that way as well. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful person and will be greatly, greatly missed.
Well, Arlene, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and great to hear from you. You were making notes, Jennifer, as Arlene was talking. Was there something she said that you wanted to respond to?
Especially when it came to the teaching. Like I said, I hadn't met her, but by going through and reading her books, you definitely feel like she's bringing it down to your level, to be able to teach you. Like, it comes from a loving place, and it transcends through her stories and all of her books and stuff.
What sort of reaction have you seen from young people reading her books? I assume that they read them in the library as well as at home.
Yeah, of course. And I have a really good time with it because we did an African-American read-in not too long ago, and I invited my sister in to be able to help me out, and we read the story Precious and the Boo Hag, or she did, and it was really fun because when you get a chance to tell scary stories and you know that the kids are listening, to be able to figure out like what's going to happen, and it's just super fun. And then having the biographies available when they have class assignments and knowing exactly where to go to be able to pull that book and letting them know that here's some information that you can use in order to be able to complete your assignment. And then it's just fun. It's fun to be able to tell stories and to engage students and to have the words right there on paper that she's written down for you, just to make it that much easier to share those stories.
Yeah, kids love to be scared.
Yeah.
And hate it at the same time.
Exactly.
But basically love it.
It's so fun. The
county library system is having a number of displays, as I understand it.
Absolutely. You can find a display at just about every single library that we have. I had to take apart a couple of displays in order to be able to get the books. But then a lot of them are being checked out at this point in time, too. So you can find any thing that you need also on our website. You can place it on hold. If you go to www.slcl.org, and you can look through our catalog and find just about any book that you need, and we can get it for you wherever you want to pick it up.
And we'll put a link to that website on ours at sdlpublicradio.org. Before I take a break, by the way, I should point out that Even in Death, another book is going to be released. My impression from what I've been reading is the fact that the book is What is Given from the Heart Reaches the Heart. It's to be released in 2019.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, but it's still coming.
One of her other books that just came out, too, I actually have it here. Hold on. It's a longer title, so I didn't write it down. So it is Let's Clap, Jump, Sing and Shout, Dance, Spin, and Turn It Out. And it's Games, Songs, and Stories from African-American Childhood. And this one just came out in 2017. So
the style of the books, I mean, as I see this, those that you've brought with us here, I mean, there are picture books and there are regular, not if I put it this way, novel-sized books and all the rest. I mean, she didn't just stylistically do one thing.
Right. And she didn't just work with the same illustrator either. So, she's the way that these different illustrators were able to put her bring her words to life, like Rachel Isadora and the Pinckneys and the Dillons and just so many different people. That collaborative process must have just been amazing.
You read her as a child?
Yeah.
How did it change you?
Oh, I am a librarian. I tell stories, and I love going into schools and telling stories and being in front and to be able to share words with students. So if it wasn't for her books or finding books like hers, it would not have been the same. And I grew up in a very small town. I'm biracial, and finding other books that represented my father's side of the family was tricky. So her books, absolutely. We had a tiny different little library. So, I mean, books are windows, mirrors, and doors. Like, we need to be able to see ourselves in books. We need to be able to see others and their lifestyles in books and to find opportunities to explore something new in books. And so I don't know what would have happened if I wouldn't have had access to these types of books and to her books when I was a child.
You know, what you're saying here reminds me of a conversation that I had here with Gerald Early a couple of years ago, Washington University professor of some renown for his knowledge of jazz and baseball and so many other things. He said that he essentially was parked himself in a library when he was a very small child. If he hadn't have done that, he wouldn't be – the man we know today, a Renaissance man of letters. So they are important. They are very important.
Absolutely.
All right. Got to take a break. We'll do that now. My guest in studio is Jennifer Ilardi, youth librarian at the Florissant Valley branch of the St. Louis County Library. We are remembering today Patricia McKissick. She wrote more than 100 books with her husband. Basically, there are histories and biographies of the African-American experience, a very important role she played in the world of letters. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Jennifer, before we say another word, I want to bring in another caller. Phyllis joins us from Maplewood with, I think, an interesting perspective on all of this. Go ahead, Phyllis.
Thank you very much. Yes, her passing at such an early age brought back the memory of my connection with the McKissicks, which was really a beautiful one and speaks to their attention to local history being made at that time. So I was a teacher in Parkway in the late 80s, and one of my students, Portland Birchfield, had written a play about the desegregation program. Well, it was not exactly popular in Parkway at that time, but it had some wonderful scenes, and I supported her doing it. Somehow the McKissicks found out about that play, which was fully produced and performed for assemblies and that. And they featured it in one of their books. It was called Taking a Stand Against Racism and something else. It was part of their Young Library series that they did, Young Reader series that they did. And it was in a lot of libraries. So I met them a couple of times, went to hear them when they gave readings at libraries and so forth. But what a gentleman he was, and what a lovely lady she was. I'm very sad, and I hope someone will pick up that spirit that had them do all that work.
Well, thank you, Phyllis, so much for that call. I'll point out here that a funeral for Patricia McKissick is scheduled for Wednesday at the Kirkwood United Methodist Church, the 201 West Adams Avenue in Kirkwood. Visitation is at the church from 10:30 a.m. until noon. The funeral service will follow. That's for next Wednesday at the Kirkwood United Methodist Church. You have brought along a number of books, as I have mentioned, Jennifer. Read something for us, would you?
Okay. This comes from the book A Song for Harlem. Then Zora entered the room, so Lily Bell got out her notebook. Every day she wrote down every single word Zora said. There are no right or wrong words, Zora began. Words are tools. The best words are the ones that express our thoughts and feelings. Ideas are everywhere. Write about what you care about most deeply. And rewrite, rewrite, rewrite. And then rewrite some more. Then Zora read aloud a poem. Gold and silver I have none, but I'm not poor, for there is one who hugs me close when the day is done. It was one of the poems Lily Bell had sent in with her application. Part of her was proud because Zora was reading her work aloud, but another part of her feared how the other students might respond, especially Alice. Lily Bell took a deep breath, blew it out slowly, and waited. "How does this poem make you feel?" Zora asked the class. "Who wrote it?" Alice wanted to know. "Doesn't matter," Zora answered. "I want to know how the words make you feel." A few hands went up tentatively. Cora May began. I think the poem means... Zora raised her hand to stop Cora May. Forget about what it means. How does it make you feel? Cora May thought for a bit. The words make me feel warm and comfortable, like being home. She closed her eyes and hugged herself. The word safe comes to my mind, said Melvin. The hug is like a fence, keeping anything bad away. That's deep thinking, Zora told Melvin, appearing surprised. It makes me feel like I'm sitting with my face to the sun, said another student. Lily Bell smiled. They were getting all of that out of her poem? She remembered the day she read it to Mdir, who cried happy tears. Zora was right. Words were powerful tools. A few more students made comments. Then Zora told the class that Lily Bell was the author. Now tell us, what were your feelings when you wrote this? One look at Alice's smirking face and Lily Bell was completely speechless. Finally she said, I don't remember how I felt. That wasn't true. Lily Bell remembered exactly how she felt. She just didn't want to say it in front of Alice and get teased later. Don't be ashamed to tell us, Alice said. She was smiling, but her words were laced with salt. Remembering her advice to Cormier, Lily Bell sat up taller in her chair. Then she said, much louder than she meant to, I wrote this poem to show him, dear, what's inside my heart. Alice made a face when she thought Zora wasn't looking. She whispered under her breath, what kind of countrified name is him, dear? Zora raised an eyebrow. Your poem reminds me of my own mother, she said. She always told me to jump for the sun. I worried how I could jump high enough to reach the sun. My mama's answer was, jump as high as you can. At least you'll be up off the ground. Good words spoken by my little countrified woman I lovingly called, dear. It was very quiet, but Zora wasn't finished. Lily Bell, I can feel the hug you wrote about. I hear your voice. Indeed, I do. Just then, Alice didn't matter anymore. Lily Bell felt like she just leaped up and grabbed a piece of the sun.
Good advice. Good advice for young people. There are a lot of subliminal messages in the passages that you read there, starting with writing. Don't be afraid of it, and do it, and do it over and over again until you get it right. She probably took that advice herself many times.
Yeah, you could see a lot of her in a lot of the stories that she told. Going Someplace Special is another book that she wrote, and it takes place, I believe it takes place in Tennessee. I know she grew up in Tennessee and was born there, but sometimes she like disguises where like the place of the actual story takes place in. But it was during segregation, and she was going someplace special, and that place was the library. And she talked about, you know, not being able to ride in the front of the bus and not being able to sit on certain benches, but knowing that the library was a place for everyone.
She was born in Tennessee. I think she came here when she was 3 years old, spent a lot of her youth here, and was a graduate of Webster University as well, and stayed and lived in Kirkwood for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So we're claiming her, by golly. We're going to claim
her. Right? Why not?
She spent the majority
She's
of
amazing.
Her life
Why here. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely. We have a couple more callers, people who knew her personally. Let's get their thoughts at this time. Roberta in Manchester, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you so very much for sharing this about Pat. Pat had been and Fred. Have been wonderful friends of ours for 32 years. Met because at one point I needed a co-author on some children's books about healthy eating, and together we did some that really celebrated food and really taught the concept of our likenesses and our differences and celebrated them together. But kind of going beyond that, the book Going Someplace Special was always a special one for me as well. I was glad it was mentioned because she has commented so many times that by being able to go into the library, she was able to go every place in the world. And I think that's a wonderful lesson to all of us that she leaves to children and adults alike, that it is through books that we learn about the world, and we can go anywhere in the world. And those messages are certainly shared with adults. Each year, we, at Christmas time, had a big party, and it would be Pat who would always be sitting on a chair, sort of having the audience of all of our adult guests enthralled with the messages that she shared that were presented in children's literature, but had messages that were far, far broader than for only a young audience. So we miss her dearly. She's given us a lot, and I don't think we have lost her. She's given so much to us that we have what she has done in our hearts and in our lives forever.
Roberta, a question for you, if I may. Obviously, Pat McKissick was a celebrity, certainly in the world of children's literature and otherwise. How did she handle celebrity?
She handled it with remarkable grace. And as one of your callers said earlier, she handled it in a way that made everyone feel as though she was their best friend, and she had the ability to listen. As she talked, she wanted to hear and she wanted to respond. And one of the most beautiful experiences that I can share is that we work a lot with AFS, with American foreign students who are here in high school. And every year she had them sit in her living room and talk to them about writing, talk to them about their experiences and her experiences within the African-American culture, and nurtured what was best in them so that when they go back to their home country, they will have not only the memory of what she taught, but she was encouraging them to be writers or themselves in the way that they felt best. And one example was a young man from Kenya, who has gone on to be a rather good writer himself. So yes, she made us all feel like we were her best friends.
Roberta, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate talking to you. Another quick call here. Patty in St. Louis. Go ahead, please, but time's getting away.
Yeah, I used to be Director of Youth Services. I just retired at St. Louis Public Library. And Pat was always wonderful and gracious and gentle and kind. And I'd see her at conference or I'd see her in town. And she would just take my hand and say, oh, walk with me, honey. She was just a generous, gentle soul. When she won the Virginia Hamilton Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Library Association, she said, what, me? And we all said, yeah, you. Because she earned things, but she never assumed them. She never claimed them as, you know, a right or anything. She was extremely generous with her time with new authors, would read people's manuscripts. She was just a wonderful, wonderful person. And one of the amazing things about her writing was she didn't stick to, she started with biographies because that's what she needed for her classroom when she was teaching. But then she moved, she experimented. She tried poetry and successfully with Never Forgotten. She wrote fiction. She wrote The Beginning Readers, you know, using 25 words and still having messy, messy stories that were wonderful. So I hope all those books stay in print for a long, long time.
I'm sure they will. As we indicated earlier, there are more to come. There's a new release coming out in 2019. Thank you so much for your call, Patty. Appreciate it. And
thank
Jennifer,
you.
Patty rings a familiar chord with you.
Yeah. Hi, Patty.
I guess she's still not there. Is there one particular genre within the genre that she spent more time doing? Did she do more biographies, for instance, than other kinds of history?
I'll tell you, when I pulled all the we pulled a bunch of books in order to be able to make a display at the Lewis and Clark branch, where I'm at right now, while our branch is getting renovated. And there was definitely a lot of biographies there. But I don't know if I could say if she spent more time in one area than the other. I haven't seen everything altogether.
Well, certainly the versatility was there.
Absolutely.
She enjoyed writing, enjoyed something. There will be a special reading, as I understand it, by the way, of Patricia McKissick's books for children aged 3 through 9 on Thursday, April 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Jamestown Bluffs branch on North Highway 67 in Florissant.
Yeah, and that's a really cool program because we encourage teen volunteers to come in, and teens earn service hours by helping reading to children. And so we are informing our teens of different literature that's out there and then also helping young people become exposed to her writing for the first time.
Yeah. A lot of traffic this past week as a result of the McKissick passing?
Oh, we're always busy at the St. Louis County Library. And I know that it was tough for me to get some of the books to bring in here today because so many books were being put on hold to be able to check out.
Are kids reading these days? There's so much technology out there to distract them. Are they reading books?
Absolutely. We have kids that come in for our story times. And then just because we have technology doesn't mean that we can't read on that technology. I've been helping students to be able to access our e-media resources that are available through the St. Louis County Library. And you always see parents coming in with full backpacks full of books to be able to take home with their kids. And our summer reading club encourages everybody. That starts on May 22nd. And they get prizes for reading. So we do our best to make sure that we have enough things on the shelf to keep them interested.
Okay. Well, good for you. And we have to end it here, but I have a message here. Fred McKissick Jr., her son, called us just a couple of moments ago, apparently didn't care to be on the air, but he called in and said that the whole family appreciates all the support from this community. His mother and father love St. Louis and all the people they interacted with. That's from Fred McKissick.
That's beautiful.
Jennifer Ilardi, thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you.
It's great to have you. At stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Colin Mueller, Monica Ramirez, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and Culture Programming on St. Louis on the Air, funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.